Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hi, everyone, and happy Thanksgiving. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright on a very special Thursday. We are so glad you are with us. We are so thankful to be
happy
here today.
Jen Wolf.
Happy Thanksgiving, Nick Wright.
Happy
that is really
partner.
Sweet.
Good to see you guys.
Air five. You won't do it. Oh, you did it. Almost because it's Thanksgiving. We have a big show on this Thanksgiving Day, so sit back, get your fixings ready, because here we go. The Saints could be on upset alert against the Falcons tonight. Big night in the NBA. LeBron back in Cleveland, and the Warriors lose yet again. But where else would we start but for the Cowboys? The Dallas Cowboys kicking off one of the best football days of the year, the one that combines Thanksgiving and football. And today it's good football. The Cowboys hosting the Colt McCoys, that's Washington, in a battle for supremacy in the NFC East. Dallas looking to make it 3 wins in a row as they push for a playoff spot at 5-5. Here is Dallas quarterback Dak Prescott on the team's mindset entering today's game.
Our backs are against the wall. Regardless, we're not worried about what we've done up to this point. It's about just moving forward, and I think that's allowed us to get on this 2-game winning streak and get the record back to 500. Is because we know our backs are against the walls. Every game matters. Every game is a must win. Nothing changes this week.
All right, CeCe, we have been talking about this game all week, the implications, what it means for both teams. Now that it is here today, what do you think is the key to this matchup?
Well, I'm going to try to make it as simple as possible, because these games on Thanksgiving, where you have the short recovery time, a lot of it, you're based on the intel of your scouting department. So you're hoping that they give you a great game plan, because you're not going to be able to walk through plays. You're not going to be able to rehearse a lot. So when the guys get on the field, a lot of things, especially the first quarter, it can be very, very sloppy. Guys aren't used to the speed, the intensity. But as the game goes on, you'll start to see that the continuity and everything of the game will get on par with the NFL game. It's just because it's just very, very hard to be able to do. Just imagine Washington traveling over the holidays with the weather and everything, going to Dallas. Now, Dallas playing at home, they have a huge advantage on Thanksgiving. But the keys to this game is we got to force both quarterbacks to try to be superstars. Dallas, with their great defense, they got to try to force Colt McCoy, be able to take them out of that running game they want with Adrian Peterson, where they can be methodical, give him 20 to 25 touches, which sets up their play action pass. But they got to try to set Colt up to be a hero, where they can put 8 in the box, force them to be able to throw the ball outside. And there's going to be around 4 to 6 plays where Colt McCoy, he's going to be out of the pocket. He's either going to be scrambling. Can the Dallas Cowboys get him on the ground before he converts either throwing the football or converting that into a pass down the field? Because he's going to try to use his athleticism. As far as Washington's concerned, they are a big physical football team, and they got to force Dak Prescott. We know the numbers. Can he throw for over 300 yards? How many touches Zeke get? They have to force Dak to try to throw the football by putting a lot of people, forcing Ezekiel Elliott to be minimized as his effect on the game. I believe those are the keys to both of these teams to be able to marry each other, put the pressure on the opposing quarterback.
A lot of people, understandably, are focused on Alex Smith's injury and Colt McCoy coming into the starting lineup for Washington. The injuries they suffered a few weeks ago make the Alex Smith injury all that more detrimental to their chances. The 3 games prior to, their offensive line injuries, losing both guards, having a right tackle injured but in the lineup, left tackle been in and out of the lineup. The 3 games previous to that, Adrian Peterson was averaging 22 carries, a buck 15 on the ground, 5 yards per carry. The 3 games since those offensive line injuries, they had Alex Smith for 2.5 of those games, 15 carries a game, 45 yards a game, 3 yards per carry.
But did they win those games?
They won one of those games. Okay. They beat the Bucs 16-3 in a game. The Bucs were 0-for-5 in the red zone. They have not been able to run the ball the way they want to since some of those big people got injured, which is why Colt McCoy has to play similarly to how he played 4 years ago when he got a win against Dallas on national television. On the flip side for Washington, they have spent consecutive first-round picks on defensive linemen from the University of Alabama, Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne. And those two guys, see, have to be monsters in their matchups today to slow down Zeke, so it can be about Dak beating
him. And Washington's done a good job in their scouting department realizing what they're going to have to do in that division. Carson Wentz there in Philadelphia, we're going to have to be able to get to him. We know the Giants, they try to be a physical football team. They like to be able to run the football. And we knew in Dallas they were going to have Dak and Zeke there. So Washington has done a tremendous job of scouting their division and realizing what do we need to do to win. And they went to the football factory in the University of Alabama and got two of their stellar players.
Is there something, though, about playing a game on Thanksgiving Day, national stage, everyone watching, obviously there's so much involved, that negates all the little details of it because it's such a big stage? Well, and maybe this is all about like emotion and heart, and you're playing on a day where you know your families are home watching.
Well, Chris has obviously played multiple Thanksgiving games, so I will defer to him on that. But I do want to, before you go, mention something Coach Mangini said, which is I had been keying on home teams on Thanksgiving, on Thursdays this year. We're 9-2. The only home teams to lose were the bad Giants and the awful Cardinals. And he brought up, he thinks that Thanksgiving, that almost doesn't apply because typically during an NFL season, your Thursday game is the game you're like, oh, just got to get through it. But he said that's not how guys feel on Thanksgiving because the whole world is watching. The NBA doesn't even play today. They give the day to the NFL, and C's got experience in those circumstances.
Yeah, Jenna, you make a good point because a lot of it, because you have such a short time to prepare, it's not X's and O's. It's not as if we're going to be able to put in some new schemes. We're going to be able to add to some stuff we were doing. No, because the short week, at the end of the day, typically it's about guys performing. It's simply one guy raises up and has a great performance. That's been my experience. Yes, it's methodical. Yes, your body's sore. You don't feel the way. But the adrenaline, knowing that it is a national audience, that does help. So ultimately, it's just about making plays. And ultimately, that becomes more important because you don't have time to build scheme for the opposition.
How different is it, because you've played in both these circumstances, on Thanksgiving against a divisional opponent playing Detroit and on Thanksgiving against a non-divisional opponent playing Dallas? Both of the early Thanksgiving games are divisional games. Lions, Bears, and the one we're talking about here, Washington and Dallas. When you have familiarity with the team, played them earlier in the year, for the Washington and Dallas played a few weeks ago, Detroit and Chicago played 2 weeks ago, play them twice every year. How much does that negate the lack of prep time because it's a divisional opponent?
Yeah, it can negate the lack of prep time, but you have to be careful that you don't think you know them as well as you know Dallas. So you have to spend the same amount of time, the same amount of energy. Does it help from your start? Because say on that Monday, you do have a head start on the opposition, but let you know, when you look to your left and right, the opposition has a head start on you too. So I think that part probably negates itself. Playing Dallas, typically you're going to be a team coming from the NFC. We've played them. We've been in the NFC. So we were more familiar with them. So not as familiar as Detroit, but Dallas. People are familiar with Dallas because they're in such the national spotlight all the time.
And here's the other thing about this game. Jason Garrett, 2.5 weeks ago, was fired. I mean, he wasn't fired, but he was fired.
All but gone.
They've won two critical road games since then, and now he has a chance, the Cowboys and Jason Garrett have a chance today, to change the narrative of their season. But if they lose, and all of a sudden they are, if they lose, they have to go 4-1 the rest of the way to have a shot at the postseason. Mm-hmm. And after this week, they've got New Orleans. So 4-1 the rest of the way, if that's what you got to do with a loss, you're in rough shape. So all the goodwill and all the positive momentum Dallas has going for them, with a loss, they're two games back and don't have the tiebreaker. So this is the definition of a swing game for the Cowboys season.
I didn't look it up exactly, but I remember Jason Garrett when you said his name. He had a tremendous game as a backup on Monday Night Football. I think it was 1994. He's trying to prevent Colt McCoy from kind of doing the same thing that he did, being the unsung hero coming off the bench and leading to a Thanksgiving Day. It should be a good game. game.
It should. You mentioned Coach Mangini. He will be out here. We'll talk about this game so much more throughout this Thanksgiving Day. But coming up, let's talk some basketball. Have the Golden State Warriors hit rock bottom after their fourth straight loss. That's next on First Things First. Moving on to the Golden State Warriors, not so golden in recent days. They got blown out by the Thunder last night. Steph Curry, as you just saw, remains on the bench with a groin injury. Draymond Green was out as well last night. How about this? The first time since Steve Kerr has been the head coach that Golden State has lost four in a row. The team says there's no need to panic. Here's Kerr after the game.
We got to get better in every dynamic. You know, we didn't rebound well tonight. We got crushed on the boards. We didn't take care of the ball, 17 turnovers. So, you know, we got to clean up all that stuff and keep fighting, and we'll find our way out. We got better days ahead. But right now, we're just in a tough go.
They're not just going to happen. We got to make them happen. And I got confidence in everybody in the locker room that we'll make those better days happen. But it's not going to just pop out of nowhere and get better for us.
All right, Nick, what do you make of this? I mean, it's easy to say, well, they don't have Steph. But this is four games in a row now. What do you make of all this?
Well, it's four games in a row. It's their 2-6 since the game Steph Curry got hurt after starting 10-1. And here's the real concern if you're Golden State. We have seen in the past Steph Curry get injured at the end of seasons and have to miss a round of the playoffs, have to miss a few games in the playoffs. And you talk all the time, C, about athletes being able to pull from their memory good or bad experiences. And if Steph gets dinged, and what is their memory going to be? Not that we were fighting through it, not we weren't as good, but we were slow. We were terrible. We were a lottery team in a half dozen to 10 games without Steph Curry early in the year. That's concerning, because what you're seeing right now is Kevin Durant, while he's putting up numbers, it's not leading to wins. And Klay Thompson looks like a different guy this year, oddly, except he had the one amazing game. And outside of that game, he's shooting like 25% from three. Iggy seems to be in a different place athletically. Everything about them looks different without Steph, and I think they'll be fine as long as they have Steph. But can they get through a first-round series as they've done in the past without Steph? That's a real question now.
Yeah, what I see is, and I'm not as concerned as people, because it's fairly easy to see that they're not shooting the ball well. And not having Steph on the court, people just talk about, oh, man, Steph and his gravity to be able to shoot the ball. And Steph's shooting the ball as well as he's ever shot the ball in his career. So if I put that back in with what they're doing, I think that they would be okay. But it's not only Steph shooting. And you have Draymond out. You have the best two passers that they have. Their best two playmakers are out in Steph and Draymond. So what makes Golden State special? Outside of their pure ability to be able to stretch the court and shoot from anywhere beyond the three-point line, is their ability to be able to move the ball. Nick, you've taught me this over the last year and a half or so. They pass the ball, and they let more people touch the ball during the course of the game and average more passes.
And more passes, more assists than anybody by far.
Yeah, so now you take out their number one playmaker. And we don't talk about Steph that much as a playmaker, because we always just talk about his shooting. But his ability to be able to break down the defense has a tremendous effect on spot-up shooters. Steph is the best one-on-one player that they have. So not only is he the best shooter, he's the best playmaker they have. He's their best shot maker. So you lose all that in Draymond, the glue, with him being there where he used to stabilize things, where he used to play make from the top of the key, and you don't have that. So I'm not concerned, because even if Steph was to miss a series or two, you know what? They got Boogie Cousins going to be in there too. They got Draymond that's going to be in there. So I believe this will only help them. I believe it helped them come down to earth to realize how important Steph really is to that mix there in Golden State.
The real NBA. Well, let me ask you a question. We've had conversations on this desk about 1-2, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, and maybe he's a distant two, but he's still a two. LeBron James won last year with what he had for the Cavs. Why can't Durant carry this team with a much more talented team than what LeBron had last year?
This is one of the most, to me, remarkable sets of statistics. And I'll give credit to Mike Lynch and Tom Haberstroh, who kind of were talking about this on Twitter and gave me the idea to put it together. Let's look at the Warriors in four categories. with both their superstars, with just one, and with neither. With both of them, they win 80% of their games. With just Steph and no Durant, it's 89%, including a 21-game winning streak.
Oh, that's amazing.
With just Durant and no Steph, it's 62%. With neither of them, listen, they don't win at all. But look at that. That's 24-3. You know what that's a pace for? That's a 73-win pace. Oh, that is exactly what they won the last year. They didn't have Durant. That dates back to since Durant got there. So when they're both there, they are spectacular. 65-win pace. Somehow, when Durant's not there but Steph is, they get even better. And when Steph's not there and Durant is, they're a good team. Now, they haven't been as of late, mm-hmm. but part of that's Draymond.
Right.
But that's a 50-win pace.
Now, what does that say about Kevin Durant?
It says this team is not built for his skill set. And that he was not LeBron came into a situation knowing I have to do everything. Durant went into a situation because he didn't have to do everything. And the Warriors, they change so drastically. See, they go from one of the fastest teams in the league when Steph's on the court to a below average league pace. Like you're talking about, it's ball movement, it's spacing, it's every Steph Curry is the secret ingredient that's not a secret. And with Durant, they just turn into a typical really good basketball team.
And with Steph out of the lineup, and Steph's not a great defensive player, but they put so much pressure on you on the offensive end that they're a better defensive team because people crumble under that pressure. This team, when you said about Durant being the only one there, it's not built for him because they struggle rebounding. And Andre Iguodala, he is not nearly. They started him last night like he's just a shell of himself athletically in the player. Like, he's not built to play, 25 minutes at this point, especially this early in the season. So I think when you get Steph and them back, you move those other players back into their limited roles.
Right.
And Draymond, you need Draymond playing at a high level. He's shooting. Him and Clay, this is some of the worst shooting that they've had their career from deep. So I believe that will improve once they get Steph back on the court.
And Clay misses his splash brother. Clay we are seeing, is just, Clay never misses games. He's one of the chillest, coolest, most consistent guys in the league. But this year, he misses his splash brother.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, how is LeBron received in his return to Cleveland? That's next. This is a special Thanksgiving First Things First. All right, time for us to go viral. Kevin Durant had some choice words for a Mavericks fan during last weekend's game, with KD being fined $25,000 by the NBA. Here is the exact moment Durant found out about the damage.
KD, I'm doing this live, so this is a little minor story. Have you heard about your fine? You want to know now? Or you want to?
I knew I was gonna get fined. How much? How much they fined me?
$25,000. I reported it now. League sources tell Yahoo being fined $25,000 for
telling the fan to shut the fan up and watch the game.
Yeah, I tell. So I just tweeted that out right now.
Yeah, it's more fans should understand what that means.
What happened with that, man?
Grown men can't come to a game and heckle grown men. That's corny and that's weak. You come into a game to heckle another grown man. You soft, you weak. Draymond this, Draymond that. Yeah. You a bitch.
All right, listen. The NBA had to fine Durant. And I understand the NBA saying you can't be cursing at the fans. But I agree with KD there, 100%.
How can you agree with them?
What? That's the basis for any that's where fans come. They heckle. No. You ever been to a football game?
Yeah. I have been to a football game, and I think grown-ups heckling, not booing, heckling, cursing at players, stuff like that, you might get clapped back at.
And if you come heckle me on Thanksgiving, come heckle me and let me give you just a little sample of what I got for you. Mm-hmm. All right? Come on.
Right, Chris Carter, man, your hand's been overrated since Ohio State.
Absolutely.
That's why they kicked you out of school. Bum.
There's only two people who know about my hands more than me, Nick. Uh-huh. That's your mom and your sister.
Oh!
Eat that on Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Right. So you agree with me.
No, I
gotta
don't.
You got to clap back.
Well, the player can clap back.
Yeah.
Like, but the fan, he didn't pay money. He can say what he wants as long as he don't throw nothing. Okay. He can say whatever he wanted to say.
Time
then
for
I
stories.
Can say whatever I want
Start
to.
Your morning. And you did.
Bap,
the
bap.
The Warriors.
Hi, okay. Mom and sis on Thanksgiving.
We love you.
Yeah, both of them.
The best. The Warriors continue to struggle last night. As we mentioned, they lost four in a row. First time since Steve Kerr became the coach. They've They've lost four straight. Steph Curry still out with a groin injury. Nick, does this prove that Steph Curry is the most important Warrior?
We are just getting further confirmation on this. How about this? On court, off court, thanks to Tom Haberstroh, since Steph and KD got there. Only Steph on the court, they're plus 14 points per 100 possessions. Only Durant on the court, they're minus a half point per 100 possessions. So they go from super elite to right below league average. Yeah, people can say Durant's better. Don't care. Steph is the man there. We keep seeing confirmation of it.
How many times, Nick, Steph been MVP?
Steph been MVP twice.
Okay, I mean, let's just not forget. Like, Steph Curry, only because LeBron James and Kevin Durant, that's the full discussion of who are the best players in the world. I always just think it's a great argument. Of course, if you didn't have one of them, the other one would miss them. Yes.
All right, big game in college basketball last night. Number three Gonzaga handed top-ranked Duke the first loss of its year. Zion Williamson, 22 points in the losing effort. See, what'd you make of Duke's loss?
Oh, man, this is a good loss. I mean, they're going against a veteran, an international team. I mean, the guy there in Gonzaga does a tremendous
Mark
job.
Mark Few.
I mean, you're talking about coaching? The way he isolated these young players, the way he brought them out to the three-point line, went back door. He's done a great job there for a long time. Nine straight NCAA bids for Gonzaga. So not surprised by this veteran-oriented ball club because they played a spectacular game.
And listen, it was a nice near comeback by Duke at the end. Gonzaga kept giving them opportunities by missing free throws. I didn't love at the end that Zion didn't touch the ball. And I'd like to see as the year goes on, can we see some high pick and roll with Zion Williamson? I don't know how a college team's going to defend that. We're seeing it with R.J. Barrett. I'd like to see with Zion.
Well, you're going to watch Duke play a lot this season because of the talent they have on the court. But also, you're going to figure something out. They don't call a lot of plays, Nick.
You're right.
Come on, Coach
that.
K. You can keep coaching. I know you're out there.
Moving on to the NFL, Chicago heading to Detroit to take on the Lions today. Bears most likely without quarterback Mitchell Trubisky, still nursing a shoulder injury. So Chase Daniel will be under center. See, you think the Bears still win without Trubisky?
I think people are going to be shocked at the level their offense is still able to play at. Nick and I are two people that are fans of Chase Daniel and what he can do. And I just believe also, I believe that the coach, Nagy, is a special guy. And I believe he's got special play calling ability. And I just believe as this offense with all these young players continues to evolve, they're going to be ultimately, they're going to look a lot like Kansas City. They're going to look a lot like the Rams in a style of attacking defense.
The only reason they wouldn't is if their quarterback, when he gets healthy, doesn't take that next step.
Yes.
I'll tell you what Vegas thinks of Mitch Trubisky right now. Ruled out or doubtful for the game, we think it's Chase Daniel. Line didn't move an inch. Like, they think that right now Chase Daniel can come in and do what Mitch Trubisky does. And by the way, if you haven't watched Chase since his time at Missouri, he'll run around a bit, much like Trubisky. He's shorter than him.
Yes.
He's going to be one of the shorter quarterbacks. I think he's one of the best backups in
after
the
this game, Jen, about halfway through, you're going to be like, I like
Yo,
him.
Yo, Chase is going to be Jen's guy. No doubt about it.
I like him.
I like that guy. To the Washington-Dallas game, 4 p.m. on Fox, DeMarcus Lawrence says the Cowboys have to get turnovers against this Washington team. He said the Dallas D will try to get all the turkeys we can. See, does the Washington offense have any chance against this Dallas D?
No, they really do. I believe that Jay Gruden, he's really underrated as a coach in the way he game plans. One of the reasons why I question Adrian Peterson being effective there because Washington and Jay Gruden hadn't let him run a lot of I formation. Mm-hmm. Man, he's adapted to that personnel. He likes to play very, very physical. So, yes, I do believe this is a good Dallas defense, but don't sleep on the Colts.
Listen, if they are going to be able to move the ball, a lot of it's going to be Colt McCoy breaking the game plan as far as scrambling away from pressure and either making a play with his feet or making a play downfield off schedule, because I don't think they can block the Cowboys front, and I don't think their tight ends and wide receivers can run away on those crossing routes from those Dallas inside linebackers who are outstanding. So I think it's Colt's going to have to play one of his best NFL games of his very brief as starting career for them to have a shot to move the ball.
All right, finally, Drew Brees and the Saints take on the Falcons tonight, looking to win their 10th straight game. In his quest for his first MVP award, Brees has thrown 25 touchdowns, only one pick. Here he is on his success this year.
When I step on the field, I feel like I can see it before it happens. You know, and it takes a lot of work to get to that point. And listen, that doesn't mean that there's not surprises. There's always surprises. that's part of what you expect. You expect to see surprises. You expect to see the team that you're going against have a wrinkle that, you know, maybe you didn't expect or that you weren't anticipating. And then it's your job to have a plan for it, have an answer for it, have an adjustment for it. But I feel good playing the game right now.
See, that's something we only hear certain times by certain high-caliber athletes. Michael Jordan, I was in the zone. I felt it. LeBron James at times. Tiger Woods, where you can do nothing wrong. The ball is big. The hole is big.
Mm-hmm.
Is that sort of where Breeze is right now? What do you make of what he had to say?
I remember about a little over a year ago, Tom Brady gave us a little insight, and people were talking about, oh, he's done. He's not going to play anymore. Tom Brady's like, well, why would I quit? And I have all the answers to the test.
Why would I stop taking the test? I have all the answers to.
Absolutely. And Drew Brees, he just gave us some insight, even in his interview. Just look how comfortable he was explaining a game that is very, very complicated and also very, very violent. So right now, he's able to play at a level. And I could appreciate not only the interview, because I was able to sit down with him earlier in the season because I was doing the game. And some of the things he talked about, because I talked about young players and their ability to get more accurate throwing the football. And he said, yes, I do believe as you get older and more experienced in this league, Chris, you can develop that, because a lot of that comes from knowing not only what they're lining up in, but where are they going to move to. And he said, in doing that, I can anticipate not only where guys are going to start, but as the play develops, where they'll be in the middle of the play and where they'll be at the end of the play. So now I know where my hots are. I know where all the guys in the offense are going to be. So my ability to get more accurate sometimes has something to do with my arm strength, but it has a lot to do with I can anticipate, because the plays are happening in real time in me, like in slow motion. And that's the rarity that we see these elite athletes be able to get to. And he gave us a great insight by sharing that with us.
The lack of mistakes he's made this year, and I don't just mean turnovers, because he obviously has just the one interception. I mean just missed passes. The only way it's possible to play this many games at this high of a level is if you are seeing the Matrix, for, you know, to mix metaphors a bit, is if it is truly slowing down for you in a way that I would say the vast majority of Pro Bowl guys have never had it slow down for them, even briefly in their career. I mean, 25 touchdowns to one interception is make-believe. That can't. There's tipped passes. There's passes that hit your receiver in the hands, and they then pop up in the air of the defender. 77% completions. Think he probably 10% are just throwaways, are throws he's not even trying to complete. He's not missing passes this year.
Nick, it's like as if you were a poker player and you were a world
thinking about
and
this.
You were a world famous poker player, and somehow they had some type of app that gave you every tell of every card player, elite card player in the world. So you went in knowing what their tells were, so you can anticipate potentially what their cards were going.
That's so funny. See, I know we got to move on. You read my. I was going to use a poker
that's
analogy,
bad. I'm reading
and I was
mine.
Like,
that's
man,
bad.
I'm gonna use a poker analogy.
I'm off brand.
Chris is gonna make me like, oh, this nerd bringing it to his gambling. But that's exactly what I think it is. He can see the tells of the defense to go along with his super high level play. Sean Payton, Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara. That's what creates what is right now the most efficient quarterbacking season we've ever seen.
When you have a hand in Go Fish, right?
Okay,
so,
okay.
Oh, we're not. Oh,
no.
Okay, so I'll do that. I'll do that after. Okay. Moving on to LeBron James now. 6'8" forward from St. Vincent, St. Mary High School. That's how the Cavs introduced him as the Lakers visited Cleveland. And just like old times, they still love him. To the game now. LeBron put on a show, throws down the dunk. This one was close all night long. Less than 3 minutes to go, LeBron hits the three to tie the game. LeBron James finishes with 32, 14, and 7. Tied at 102 now. LeBron finds Lonzo Ball, who hits JaVale McGee for the layup. Uh-huh, I did that. I started that one. That went in. That was good. Then on the other end, McGee gets the block on Chetty Osman when he goes up for the layup. All right, Cavs down three now. Kyle Korver with a look to tie, wide open. He can't get it to go. Lakers go on to win. Woo, 109-105, and probably the Cavs' best game this season. Also, when LeBron James return. Here is the Kang after the win.
You know, for my 11 years I played for this franchise, I just tried to give everything I could, both on the court and off the court. You know, represent this city, represent this community, you know, with the utmost respect, be a role model off the floor, be a leader on the floor. And, you know, to come back and get the reception that I got tonight, it means a lot to not only myself, but for my family and my friends that was here tonight, and my family that's back home in L.A. as well. You know, we knew we was going to get their best shot. We knew that the fans was going to be ecstatic because we were in town. I'm in town. So they played a heck of a game. But we kept our composure even with, we're a young crew. You know, we're a young group, but we're getting better.
All right, Nick, what'd you make of the way the Cavs welcome LeBron back?
I want to give the Cavs fans, but most importantly, because I knew the fans would step up. I know the fans. It is not 2010 all over again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They've got a championship. They have intense love for him. But the Cavs organization, I've been very critical of, not only giving him the full 90-second tribute video, but doing something that I think was very important and I know meant a lot to LeBron and the people around him, which was spending half of the time. You only have 90 seconds to put LeBron's whole Cavs career into a video as a tribute. And they spent half of it doing non-basketball. They spent half of it talking, showing stuff about his school, things he's done in the community, because that is the most important part of LeBron James' legacy in Northeast Ohio. That is what he would tell you his most important part is, his family and friends would, and that the Cavs recognized that in the tribute video and spent half the time on that, I thought was incredibly classy, and you could tell it had an effect on LeBron emotionally. This was 8 years ago. They thought they were going to have to call the game, see? Guys were throwing batteries on the court. It was nasty. It almost got violent. This was a great return and a shockingly compelling basketball game.
Yeah, and I'm glad he only got to do it one time. I'm glad they're opposite coast. I'm glad we don't have to see it. And it was well deserving because the mark that he left, not only on that organization and on that part of the country, it will last for generations. So I'm glad they did the right thing. You know, instead of punching down, they said we're gonna do the right thing here, and that's only to honor what he's done, the man who brought the championship.
Sure.
And it's you cannot acknowledge LeBron without acknowledging what he's done from a social setting there, as far as changing people's lives, giving people the ability to be a higher achiever in life, the same opportunity that he got through education. So it's nice that they put that in there compared to because. Most of those buckets, now what they did in 2016, that was special. But most of those other baskets that he made, assists he made, dunks and everything, they're not as important as the other things that he's done.
All right, let's get to the game itself. Were you surprised this game was as competitive as it was?
I mean, I know there's got to be a little part of LeBron watching all of a sudden Jordan Clarkson make key buckets, Tristan play like it was 2016, Jetty play the game of his life and say, Where was
where
this last year?
Yeah.
This was the best game.
Jetty hits a runner three-pointer.
I mean, this was the best game the Cavs have played all season by an enormous margin. And it took LeBron was not – he was going to do everything he could to not lose this basketball game. This was not a game where it's like, all right, let's see what Ingram and Ball can do. They went on 11-3 run late to turn a seven-point deficit into a two-point lead. LeBron scored or assisted every single one of those points and put his imprint on this game late, see, because, I mean, they were down nine midway through the fourth quarter. This one could have gone the other way, and that would have been just an awful loss for the Lakers.
No, it should have gone the other way. I have to look and get Dusty to look how many NBA teams have lost a game with only three turnovers. Like, it's almost amazing. So Cleveland played the type of game that no one would ever expect. They played almost a perfect game. But in the end, they were able to – Lakers, they got some stops.
Yep.
It's the same old theme. Oh, they're not going to play any defense. And the one thing from that was a little alarming was Ingram. I'm a little worried about him as an offensive player. Mm-hmm. When LeBron was out, he didn't take over the way I expected.
And don't look now, but if you care about the NBA advanced stats – who leads the NBA in player efficiency rating, value added, expected wins added? Oh, LeBron. Year 16, best player in the league by one.
I literally was just about to say, you don't have any advanced stats. Do you have any advanced stats?
I got
stats
them for you, Jenna. I know that's what you're
all right, let's
about.
Go into the Why break with that. Back here, first things first, Eric Mangini joins us. Happy Thanksgiving, Coach. Thanks
happy
for being with us on the holiday.
Good to be here.
We appreciate it. We needed some good insight. We brought you in because you're our favorite guest.
I was a little disappointed in the Thanksgiving wipe. I mean, we set the bar very high at Halloween. We don't even...
We don't have turkeys going across the street. Where, we're trying to keep it classy, Coach. We're keeping it classy.
Coach, we spent all the money on our local turkey.
Oh, is that? Okay, that makes sense.
You guys Project need a break cuts. From family on this Thanksgiving. The NFL has you covered with the late game. It's a good one. It's a showdown in the NFC South. It is the Falcons who head to New Orleans to take on Drew Brees and the Red Hot Saints. Saints trying to make a 10 in a row to keep pace with those Rams out west on top of the NFC. But Drew Brees says it is always a struggle against this Falcons team.
These are always hard-fought games. I mean, both games last year you wouldn't call high-scoring games, right? Obviously, the first year, the one this year was, but, you know, I just know they're typically close games. and they're hard-fought games, and, you know, their games come down to the last possession. We're not looking too far ahead. I mean, we're so singularly focused right now just because we don't feel like we've put our best out there yet. You know, you're always striving for that perfect game. I don't think you ever find it, but it's just that, it's that striving for it that allows you to take one, you know, put one foot in front of the other and continue to, you know, stack the bricks and build what you want to build.
Coach, Drew Brees and this Saints team locked in right now, playing about as good as they've played all season, as almost any other team is playing. What do they have to do against this Falcons team so they don't avoid the upset?
Well, a big part of this is what they've done leading up to it. So you know this game is happening. You know that you're playing on Thanksgiving. It's going to be a short week. So what you did after you played the first game, there's a thing that we would always do called an after-action report. Things we did well, things we did poorly, mm-hmm. what we want to do the next time we play them, how well they assessed the last game at that moment when it was fresh in their mind, how much work they did, understanding they were playing on a short week is going to be a big part of who's most effective because you have such a limited amount of time to prep. Now, look, if I'm the Falcons, they don't produce very many sacks. Okay, mm-hmm. They don't produce very many turnovers. They've got one fumble the whole season. To me, I'm not trying to match the Saints man for man. I'm not, and I don't mean by coverage. I'm not trying to match all the things they do. If I was them, I would spin the Rolodex. When the Saints know what you're in, they're going to chew you up. And their X's are typically better than your O's, and that's going to be the case for Atlanta's defense. I would bring things that were off script. I would bring things that they aren't prepared for and just spin it.
That's
just,
what spin the Rolodex means?
Yeah, just make it unpredictable for Drew Brees. Make it unpredictable for the running game. Put them in a situation where they're on their heels. That, to me, is the only chance that Atlanta has from a defensive perspective because if they try to go toe-to-toe, scheme for scheme, personnel for personnel, it's just not going to work out for them.
See, this was the game you did, right?
Yes.
And so this game at Mercedes-Benz Superdome when they played in week three, I know Atlanta left that game feeling, while they wouldn't say it, man, if we win the coin toss, we win the game. That game was a shootout, and it goes to overtime. When I say the coin toss, the overtime coin toss, obviously. And New Orleans gets the ball first, marches right down the field, scores a touchdown, good night, you never touch the football. I think Atlanta can take a lot of things from what they did that game offensively and what they've been doing almost throughout most of the season offensively and say, we can do what we've been doing, and we can do it like en route to 37 points when we played them the first time. Defensively, this is what I call a David versus Goliath game, which is you are such an underdog schematically on one side and personnel-wise, you have to take bigger chances. This could be a game, I know you were a fan in your coaching career, of the surprise onside kick. Things like that. Things that could, sometimes that makes it, you let go of the rope.
Yeah. And the problem is they got Mike Westall. You know, Atlanta, they ain't going to surprise him because he's one of the best special teams coaches. But I do understand what you're saying.
Even if you remove that specific thing, I just mean taking, add variance to the football game.
Well, when we played him when I was in Cleveland and we were not Goliath, we were David at that point, our whole approach was exactly what I was talking about. We were going to do the unpredictable, at times completely unsound, fake punts, onside kick, things because we had nothing to lose. And we ended up picking off Drew Brees twice for touchdowns. We beat him in New Orleans because it doesn't make sense. And you've got to give him some of that Otherwise, you're on your heels the whole game.
Right. I do agree with both of you talking about as far as the unpredictable part. In certain parts of the game, you have to be able to do things that in that part of the game that you wouldn't do. As far as special teams and other situational football, you're going to have to do things to be able to try to gain some competitive advantage. I believe from an X's and O's standpoint, they can throw the football, the Falcons, against New Orleans secondary. And one thing where Dennis Allen has improved this secondary is they're not giving up as many big plays. In that first game that I witnessed, man, they gave up a number of big plays, and they couldn't find an answer for Calvin Ridley. I believe that Calvin Ridley will be a big part of that passing attack. But if I'm the Falcons, I got to be able to run the football. If I want, I need to be able to shorten this game. I got to get some of those yards from the passing game over from a rushing attack because I got to be able to keep them off the field. Now, you're talking about unconventional stuff? Let me tell you something that does work. I can't depend on the turnover being able to win that, but I know time of possession. And when you have an explosive offense, when we are dealing with the Saints, the Rams, the Chiefs, you got to try to win that time of possession. That is the number one path to victory in being physical and running the football. Can the Falcons come up with enough of a running attack that they get that portion of the game in their favor? Can they have 33 minutes to 27? That's the way the Falcons can go down there and pull off the upset, Jenna.
And you brought up Westhoff too. Last game they blocked a punt. You've got to make sure that you don't get taken advantage of by something they surprise you with.
Still a tall order for this Falcons team decimated by injuries over the course of the last couple weeks since the last time these two teams played. Coach, stick around. Coming up, will the Cowboys seize control of the NFC East with a win today? That is next on First Things First. Now time for the Subway Choice moment. We kick things off with one of the best football days of the year, the one that combines Thanksgiving food and football. And today, pretty good football. The Cowboys hosting the Colt McCoys. That would be Washington. It's a battle for supremacy in the NFC East. Dallas looking to make it three wins in a row as they push for a playoff spot at 5-5. Coach, a very much discussed game all week. Now that it is here, what is the key to this matchup?
Well, going back and looking at the first game, Dallas has got to be kicking themselves when they look back at what they did. Ezekiel Elliott had 15 carries, barely ran the ball. They threw the ball a ton. They had the turnover on the five-yard line late in the fourth quarter. Then they're able to come back and score, get the ball back, drive down. They're about to kick a field goal. They jump off sides. The kicker hits the crossbar. It should have gone into overtime, and they really should have won. So I think we're going to see a healthy dose of Zeke this game. That part of the equation is going to change. And to
they figured out who they are now.
Yeah, and it's hopefully. Hopefully it doesn't get into a situation where if they get down, they transition back to, you know, the pass-first mentality. It's going to be interesting to see how Washington handles this. I expect them to give Dallas a bunch of screens, wide receiver screens, things to slow down that pass rush. They've got to run the ball consistently, whether they're gaining yards, significant yards or not, to protect Colt and give him a chance to be successful.
I'm going to go on the other side as far as the Cowboys, what I believe they're going to have to try to do. Typically, people know that, oh, man, they're going to hand it to Zeke, so they have to be able to throw the ball and be it effective. I have concerns on two different levels. Number one, from a personal standpoint, Michael Gallup. Guy who made one of the big plays in Atlanta last week, late in the ball game, he runs a deep comeback. Dak makes a great throw. They're able to convert a first down to be able to ultimately get in the field goal range. He had a personal tragedy. His brother committed suicide. He left the team, didn't go back to Dallas, left the team for a period of time after the Atlanta game because he's from that area of the country. So now with his overall development, I'm still concerned about Amari Cooper. I'm still waiting for that breakout game. I'm waiting for him to be able to be the deep threat, not the intermediate, not the short, but ultimately he's got to be able to live up to that first round trade and for them to be at their absolute best. Tight ends haven't been a threat. So how do they get these four or five big chunk plays that I need out of that passing game, Nick? That's what I'm concerned about. They're going to win. And if they're going to be able to make it easier for Dak, that has to be able to happen on the outside. So that's what I'll be watching as this game
unfolds. Plays on. Yes. This is the one spot where I disagree with you as far as the passing game goes. I think what you're describing is absolutely what they will need to do to have any chance to win next week against New Orleans. When you're playing a Washington team that's down 2.5 offensive linemen, that's on a backup quarterback, that since they've lost their offensive linemen have scored 14, 16, and 21 points. When you're a Dallas team that since the beginning of 2016 is 21-2 when Dak doesn't turn the ball over and Zeke is coming off his best two games of the year, I don't know if this is a game that I'm so concerned with showing that Amari Cooper, getting Amari Cooper involved because of the potential downside to it. I think this is a game that Dallas, if they play it straightforward, if they play it as conservative as the Jags played that Steelers game, if they just say we're going to hand the ball off and play great defense, and if we don't make a mistake, we are going to win, that's the game plan I would have. Now, maybe that's too conservative. I'm not typically conservative in football or in nature, but that would be my game plan against Colt McCoy, against a team that doesn't have any offensive line, and against a team that's been struggling to score points.
And it's going to be interesting to see what their opinion is of Colt McCoy. Are they going to be willing to play it close to the vest and keep this game close, or are they going to try to do what Chris is talking about and get the ball down the field a little bit and see whether Colt can play from behind? And I know you mentioned it earlier in the show. Colt's last meaningful game was against the Cowboys
in
2014, and he tore him up.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine he'll play better than expected, but they're going to have to protect him against his pass rush with a lot of screens and a lot of wide receiver screens.
Can we specifically talk about something you sort of glossed over a little bit, which is getting Amari Cooper mm-hmm. back into the fold and into mm-hmm. the mix with this team? It hasn't happened in the last couple weeks, and I wonder if that's more on him or more on the offense isn't being designed to incorporate him more.
Yeah, I'm just not going to allow just people just to continue to blame Dallas coaches for everything. Dallas, they do have talented players. But at some point in your career, you have to start being responsible for the coaching and for the information. And I believe that Dallas, I believe their wide receiver coach is a good coach. And I believe that they're trying. But a lot with Amari, at some point, you have to get better. And getting better means you have to start responding to the coaching, responding to them putting you in positions to be able to make plays. And you have to be able to make plays on Sundays, on Thursdays. So for me, at this point in Amari's career, I understand. I'm surprised that he's not a better wide receiver. He was one of the most talented and one of the most well-rounded wide receivers coming out of college football. He was one of the guys that was always trying to get better, not a diva, always there early, always staying late, always trying to get that edge as a wide receiver. I'm just wondering, at some point, is he trying to do too much in trying to be too creative in running his routes compared to just being robotic like Larry Fitzgerald? If I need to run a dig, I can take 7 steps, 2 to the post, and flatten it off and not try to add a lot of flavor. When I watch this individual, I think he's trying too hard to be too creative on some of the basic routes.
And look, I know Sanjay Lal personally. That's the wide receiver coach for the Cowboys. He's smart, he's detailed, he's demanding, he's very good at what he does. And Chris brings up a really interesting point, because whenever you trade for someone or you give someone a big contract in free agency or whatever, however they come, but with high expectations, the player oftentimes pushes and the team can push too, and that can have a tremendous negative effect on what you're trying to get done. You brought him here for a reason, to be who he is. And the quicker he can be who he is and fit into that scheme, I think you're going to see that production increase as opposed to trying to push him the ball or him pushing to do things that are outside of what's being asked.
See, what part of the country is Amari Cooper from?
South Florida.
South Florida.
Miami.
And I understand he suffered an injury in high school, but there are Florida schools that wanted him to come play football for them.
Yeah, he could have gone anywhere.
Could have gone anywhere he wanted. Where did he choose to go to school?
Alabama. Because he knew it was the best. He knew it was the toughest.
The toughest.
But he wanted to play at the biggest stage. He didn't want any shortcuts to being great.
This is what is, because I know you've known Amari for a long time. This is what is so confusing about this player's specific arc, is he's always been a guy who has taken the hardest route. He's always been known as an incredibly hard worker. He hasn't suffered a traumatic injury. He was amazing at Alabama, and he was instantly great in the NFL. To now be going on 2 years of mediocre to subpar production, I can't figure that out. And you're, of course, right on that. He's got to take some ownership for it. But it would make sense. It's like, oh, he got a big contract. Stop trying. Oh, he's always been a guy whose effort waxes and wanes. None of that's been the case. And now it's multiple systems, multiple coaches. It's only three games in Dallas. But, yeah, you do need at some point for him to be the guy that he was in college and his first 2 years in the pros.
But sometimes, Nick, the coaching point is try less. Sometimes it's try less and relax. And just by taking a step back and a breath, that's what puts you over the edge.
Yes.
Dallas.
Take a breath.
Like me?
Yeah. Like you do.
There's many ways I put you all over the edge. Thank you very much.
There you go.
Much more First Things First right after this. Let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys now. They've gone 2-1 since adding Amari Cooper in a trade earlier this season. They're now 5-5, and they've got high hopes of winning their division. Jerry Jones had high praise for the wideout, comparing his impact to, wait for it, guys, Hall of Famer Michael Irvin.
Oh, my God.
I'll let that settle in for a second. CC, what do you make of that comparison?
Jerry, yesterday Jerry's out on the same corner. And ever since Jerry did that interview, obviously he's done another football interview. And now I got to run away from him. I got to run the total opposite way.
Yesterday he was talking about how the Cowboys could compete with the best
Rams
scoring offenses
the
in the league. Not scoring with them, but because of their style of football. And you were like, yes, the weather's going to change. Good defense, good running game still matters.
Absolutely. Defense is still going to be important. So I respect Jerry, what he knows as far as building a team and everything. But this is what And a lot of people, you might not know Michael Irvin. You might just see him on television. You might see his outfits and wonder, you know, is he colorblind or something like that? No. Okay. But Michael Irvin, as far as NFL players, it would be hard for me, and I'm talking about the last 30 years, to find 10 leaders in the NFL locker room better than Michael Irvin. Like, I know this guy. I know the level of respect, not only that people give him, but what Michael has demanded. And a lot of that came from just stuff that people don't even know. It was legendary. Him and Troy Aikman, they used to do in the 100-degree temperature of Texas, they used to do 2-minute drills in full pads. Michael and Troy just out there working on stuff. So a lot of people, when you say stuff like this, people are like, oh, yeah. No, Michael Irvin was a better leader. You don't win them 3 Super Bowls, Jerry. You can't say that. And Amari is not that kind of player. He's not that kind of person. You can't keep comparing, oh, Dax like Troy, oh, Zeke's like Emmett. No. And Amari's like Michael. Jerry, you got to stop doing this because these are the greatest players that ever played this game. And of them being in the Hall of Fame, but the Hall of Fame is difficult, then you just can't just compare any player. Amari Cooper is a very, very quiet, a very, very confident, but a very reserved, he is not a diva. He does not need attention. And he is a leader, but he's a leader by example. He is a more like Larry Fitzgerald, Calvin Johnson model than the in-your-face dynamic leader that Michael Irvin is. I'm not trying to say that you can't be quiet and be a dynamic leader, but I'm not going to let you compare someone to I consider one of the greatest leaders that we have seen in the NFL and being able to handle NFL locker room.
And if we're going to go to the era, Irvin's era, wouldn't Amari be more demeanor-wise like Herman Moore? Guy we had on the show, a guy that also wasn't a demonstrative player. You tell me if I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, it's fine.
Yeah, Herman and him have kind of the same disposition. There were people on that. Yes, absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's a good comparison.
But what does you always talk about, and everyone that played in Michael's era, and we've talked obviously a lot with Moose Johnson, who was on the teams with him, about everyone says great leader. What either makes, in general, someone that's not a quarterback, that doesn't have the natural leadership position, a great leader, or what made specifically Michael? You said the two practicing a lot in the heat, but there's got to be something else that made him special from that perspective.
Michael, he knows football. His football IQ is extremely high. He also comes every day prepared to work as hard as anyone, a lot like my teammate Johnny Randle. So he's going to be one of the hardest workers on the field. You see his overall sacrifice. And Michael wasn't. He didn't have gaudy numbers. Michael wasn't always saying, throw me the football. He could play within a team concept. He did that at Miami with all those other superstars. And he did that with Troy and Emmitt, Jay Novacek, and Alvin Harper. He shared the ball. He didn't have that same what people think that he was. He wasn't that. He was a great team player. So in doing that, when you're on a great team, and even players on their defense, they always were fondest of Michael Irvin and the direction and leadership that he gave that football team.
Well, part of what made Michael Irvin so good was, yes, he was a great leader. Yes, he was a great football player. Yes, he had Troy Aikman throwing him the ball. I mean, those are three things we're not seeing from Amari Cooper. He's a great football player. The skill level's not there. He's too quiet right now to be that big vocal leader in the locker room, and he certainly doesn't have a Troy Aikman who's connecting with him.
And that last one's the most important one. Like, the most important element here is, and the reason that any of these comparisons is unfair, is the only guy on this year's Cowboys team that you can compare skill-wise to the dynasty of the Cowboys is their running back.
Yes.
And listen, I'm not saying Zeke's Emmett. I think Emmett somehow has become one of the most underrated players in the history of the league. People, I see top five all-time running back lists. You know I love lists. And some people leave off the NFL all-time leader in rushing yards, rushing touchdowns because, oh, they give it the offensive line. Emmett was tremendous. But Zeke has Hall of Fame talent. He has Hall of Fame ability. Now, we'll see if he can do it for a dozen years, 15
And he has
years.
A Hall of Fame setup. How the team is built.
Yes.
How they going to play.
Correct.
Every
How they're
going
to feature him.
Yeah, he's going to be featured every week. Those types of things are critical. And even though he's touched the ball, Zeke has not taken a pounding as far as injuries. So early in his career, he doesn't have the same early in his career as Eric Dickerson.
Right.
No, man, Eric Dickerson got banged around. He put up tremendous numbers and everything. So those are the types of things help you to have that type of
the
career.
The Cowboys running game can remind you of the golden era. And you know what? That Cowboys front is starting to remind you partially of the golden era.
Yes.
The part of the team that is as far removed from the golden era as it could be is their passing attack. They don't have Jay Novacek. They've got Jeff Swaim. They don't have Michael Irvin and Alvin Harper. They've got now Amari Cooper and Alan Hearns. They don't have Troy Aikman. They've got Dak Prescott. Like, it's not apples and oranges. It's apples and bowling balls at this point. And, like, that's in fairness to those great players, and it's not putting too much on the current players.
And it's not only Jerry, but we see this a lot. People in Minnesota, they call me all the time, and Adam Thielen's having a tremendous year. It's like, ah, man, this guy's the greatest Vikings here. Hey, man, slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
You got a couple wide receivers up there in the Hall of Fame. Him and Stephon Diggs, they're very good. But people try to make the comparison.
Of course.
The Moss and I all the time. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to Amari. Jerry, slow it down a little bit. I'll try to catch up to you and get on the same corner with you with the next interview.
All right, that's a quick
That'll
break.
That'll come tomorrow, I'm sure.
Quickly, though, who's the leader in this locker room right now, in this Cowboys locker room? Quickly.
It has to be Dak, but it's probably Zeke. It should be Dak. It's probably Zeke.
All right. A Thanksgiving special drawing a blank. Here we go. Khalil Mack and the Bears will look to take their four-game win streak into Detroit today to take on the Lions in an NFC North showdown. All right, C, the player that'll have the biggest impact on the Bears-Lions game is blank.
Well, Jenna, every time the Bears are on, you need to watch Khalil Mack. So that's just a given right now. He's with the Bears. He's must-see TV. But I got to watch their quarterback. I believe Chase Daniels is able to not duplicate the earlier season success that they had from the quarterback. But I'm looking for him, Nick. He's going to throw for close to 300 yards in this game.
Oh, okay.
I believe that Nagy, the quarterback coach, the head coach, the play caller, he's going to get it out of him because this offense, at its best now, it's supposed to look a lot like Kansas City and a lot like the Los Angeles Rams.
You know that I think Chase Daniel is the best backup quarterback in football. He has been paid like the best backup quarterback in football for quite a few years. But I'm going to go with the guy you said everyone's going to have to watch, Khalil Mack. When he's been healthy this year, he has been as impactful a defensive player as Aaron Donald has been. Those two guys are going to go down to the wire for defensive player of the year. He can wreck football games as he has a half dozen times this season. Khalil Mack's the guy who I think is going to have the big biggest impact in today's game, getting after Matthew Stafford.
Good choice. And because it's Thanksgiving, I ain't going to say that's the easy choice.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to Washington-Dallas. That game today on Fox. Big NFC East implications on the line as the Cowboys look to join Washington atop the division. So, Nick's the X factor, also Nick, in the Washington-Dallas game will be blank.
I could go with the easy choice and say Amari Cooper, but I'm going to go a little deeper on this. I'm going to go with the Washington defensive line as a whole, particularly the 2017 and 2018 first-round picks out of Alabama, Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne. For Washington to have any chance, they have to stop Zeke, and mm-hmm. they have to stop Zeke without having to bring eight into the box. They got to have their defensive linemen defeat the Cowboys' offensive linemen, so the Washington D-line.
Great insight, too, in looking at how they've drafted. They're trying to stop the Cowboys long-term, so they're going to need those guys to play well. On the outside, Jenna, we need Amari Cooper. We need to continue to see him to evolve. We need some big plays. Let's not make the game as simple. It's going to be more complicated than give it to Zeke. You need to be able to make some big plays in the passing game. And the other weapon on the other side, Michael Gallup, the rookie, he's been away from the team for the most of the week. He's had a tragic loss in his family. So let's go Amari Cooper. Be the X factor in this game.
All right, let's stick with this one. Every player will be looking to take home the prize trophy, formerly known as the Galloping Gobbler Award. The MVP is now given the Fox Game Ball. So, CC, the winner of the Fox Game Ball between Washington and Dallas will be blank.
Dak Prescott. He's going to play one of those kind of games that I believe that exactly like you want, because he's going to get it. They're going to utilize the screen game with Zeke. The tight ends haven't been that effective, and Amari Cooper. But you know when Dallas Cowboys play well, Dak Prescott is a part of that. So I believe that Dak is able to get that.
I think Zeke's going to have his third straight monster game. Everything I said about the Washington D-line, what they need to do, I don't think they're going to be able to do it. I think Zeke's going to hit him for a buck 50 yards from scrimmage, couple touchdowns, and he will get the Fox game ball, the Galloping Gobbler, as Jenna put it. Ezekiel Elliott is my answer.
All right, the last game of the day, Matt Ryan and the Falcons looking to keep their playoff hopes alive, taking on Drew Brees and the Saints, who have won 9 in a row. Nick, the player you're most excited to watch in tonight's Falcons-Saints game is blank.
It's got to be Drew Brees. What he's doing this year, 25 touchdowns to one pick, completing nearly 4 out of every 5 passes. Mm-hmm. He is having the most efficient quarterback season we've ever seen. You know, in all sports, I'm a sucker for efficiency, so Drew Brees, easy answer.
Yeah, there's a lot of little geeky things that Nick's going to be looking at that I love. Also, not because I'm a geek and everything, but just because Drew Brees is just so efficient at what he's doing. He's playing the quarterback, and Nick talks about, man, I want to see a guy who can play at the highest level no matter what he's doing. And Drew Brees is doing that. It's exciting to see. It's exciting to see how he's able to take advantage of defenses, because he lets you know where the soft spot in the defense is. Why? Just watch the football, man. You get an education in watching him. It should be a treat tonight.
All right. Most important question, here we go. With 3 games of jam-packed action to watch throughout your day, there is nothing else to do but sit back, relax, and mange. Eat as much food as possible. All right, guys, let's all weigh in here. CC, your favorite thing to eat on Thanksgiving is blank.
Man, I love food. I really, really do. I'm about some desserts, though. I love my desserts. I love ice cream, pies, cookies, everything. So I'm about dessert. My favorite thing about Thanksgiving, besides watching that awesome football, is eating some dessert, Jenna.
All right.
Not like you.
See, I didn't realize
I'll get to me in a second.
You were so prolific on Thanksgiving.
What?
5 touchdowns in 4 games on Thanksgiving? 3-1 record?
Yeah, I'm trying to get to dessert, bro.
Okay.
I'm trying to get to dessert.
Right? I'm going to go with my favorite thing, because it's the only day of the year I get to eat it, and I love it. Man, that green bean casserole with the little fried onions on top.
Oh, yeah, on top.
Little cream of mushroom soup in there. Oh, my gosh. I would only eat it on Thanksgiving, but I love it on Thanksgiving. Green bean casserole.
All right, America, get ready for this, because I know this is going to be one of the most succulent, savory type of meals.
Here we
go. If you are a foodie, here we go.
Here we go. You're going to take Brussels sprouts. You're going to cut them in half and roast them.
You're ruining everyone's
appetite. Just stop. Then you take a thin piece of tofu. Cut it thin.
I'm going to leave.
Put it in between. Just put it in between each Brussels sprout with a little toothpick, and you got a little Brussels sprout tofu sliders.
Okay.
You can eat as many as you want. That's the beauty.
I can eat as much of this paper as I want to.
Don't eat that paper.
No, no, no.
Don't eat that paper.
You don't have to cook the paper. Jenna, how do we cook that?
A little bit, a tiny bit of olive oil spray, a little salt and pepper. Oh,
okay, cool. I know that's
how
the
many
season.
Calories what about am I the heat, though?
Oh, heat. I don't know anything about that. And the tofu you buy at Whole Foods.
So you got the recipe, but you don't know how long we cook it and what heat.
No, but he's still eating paper.
Yeah,
so
I mean, might
good.
As well.
You get as many calories.
Zero calories, zero flavor.
He's literally eating paper. Mm. I just have to say, on this Thanksgiving, I am so thankful and grateful for your sense of humor. Mm-hmm. It is really refreshing.
These are the Brussels sprouts tofu is delicious.
We gotta go. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.